This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
Rabble.ca.
Hi, I'm Wayne McPhail, and I was one of the people that originally started the Rabble Podcast Network, and I think that you should support the Rabble Podcast Network and Rabble.ca because there's no other place where you're going to get such a diversity of voices speaking truth to power.
The Rabble Podcast Network is 10 years old this year. Show your support by going to rabble.ca/donate.
You're listening to Red Eye on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 100.5 FM.
Last year, Canada, the United States, Mexico, and 9 other countries announced the conclusion of negotiations on the Trans-Pacific Partnership. It's a massive trade deal involving more than 40% of the world's economies, and it's controversial on a number of fronts. Even establishment politicians like Hillary Clinton have criticized it, noting that it will cost domestic jobs. Here in Canada, the Liberal government is proceeding towards ratification of the agreement. Harjap Gruel is the Pacific Regional Organizer for the Council of Canadians. Earlier this week, he spoke with Red Eye's Sean Mullen. Sean began by asking him why the new government is forging ahead with this deal.
I mean, it's interesting. I mean, one is just that there's this notion, it's been for quite a while where a lot of countries around the world are seemingly wanting to be pro-free trade agreements. You know, we've gone through an era of about 20 years where these agreements have been proposed as the economic solution for every economic issue that a country might have. We're still kind of living in an era where a lot of people are just clearly talking about the economic or the supposed economic benefits of these agreements. I think one of the differences in the U.S., but also in Europe, where you see a lot of opposition to agreements like the agreement that they're negotiating with the U.S. and also the Canadian agreement that they're negotiating, is that social movements have been much more active and vocal in opposition to these agreements. And I feel like when, you know, that opposition is clear and, you know, people actually have looked at the details of the agreement that go beyond the kind of propaganda that's available to us in the mainstream media that promotes its economic benefits, it's very hard to sell these agreements to the public. And I think that's what's happening in the U.S. and in Europe. And I feel like in Canada, we're beginning to see a growing movement in opposition to the TPP, but we're much behind where the U.S. and Europe would be.
One of the arguments I've seen in favor of the TPP is that if we don't join, we'll be left out of the tent and that we'll suffer economically. What do you think of that argument?
Well, I mean, it's like, what do you mean by that tent, right? Like, that's the important question for people to ask. Several people, including, a former researcher at the at CUPE, the Canadian Union of Public Employees, Blair Redlin, has made it very clear that if you look at the numbers with most of these countries, there isn't really very many trade barriers, right? Like, I mean, you look at, you know, whether it's Vietnam or Australia, like we have like Australian wines in our liquor stores, we have goods and services produced in Vietnam in our stores. So the trade barriers aren't really an issue. So you're not really being left out of anything. You're not going to stop trading with these countries, and these countries, you know, companies aren't not going to want to stop trading goods here. And I think that's the big misnomer here, right, is that, like, we really need to be very clear that these agreements aren't really about trade. Of the some 30-odd chapters of the Trans-Pacific Partnership, I think 6 of them have to actually do with trade. And so what I was alluding to earlier, when you reframe the discussion and go beyond this idea that we're going to be left out of this economic opportunity, is that the agreements are really about corporate rights, right? And it's the fact that Canadian corporations won't enjoy, expanded corporate rights and corporate power in the regions that this agreement is going to be negotiated. So the people that are really going to be left out are going to be Canadian corporations that want to be able to have, protections that go far beyond the rights of communities in all of these countries.
Can you clarify what you mean by expanded rights? What kind of rights are corporations looking for in these other countries?
the expansion of and sort of the entrenchment of corporate rights actually cuts across all sorts of issues. A big piece of it that a lot of these agreements are looking at is actually establishing private or intellectual property or other forms of property in areas and in arenas of social life that they don't exist, right? So, for example, you know, patent protections for pharmaceutical companies. A lot of the world does not necessarily recognize them and relies on generic drugs produced in other parts of the world. So it's, you know, the expansion of that property right that these pharmaceutical companies want into other jurisdictions that doesn't normally exist. In addition to that, they're looking at expanding intellectual property into biologics, things like that are like sort of organic medicines that are given to individuals or biological medicines that are given, the expansion of intellectual property onto the internet. So there's all of that kind of thing where they're expanding, you know, basically the rights of corporations to own and profit off of the ownership of, you know, social and material goods. And then in addition to that, what we like see as probably the biggest problem and, you know, one of the reasons why opposition is so strong around the world is these investor-state arbitration chapters that are included in all of these agreements, which essentially allow a corporation to seek compensation or sue national governments if there's a policy or regulation that is passed that either expropriates or limits their ability to profit on their investment in the country. And so, you know, that sounds a bit complicated, but the basic idea is that if people decide to, you know, for example, protect the environment or public health by passing a policy that limits a corporation's ability to do business in that country, they will then seek damages and compensation from the company. And so, you know, a famous case in Canada right now is the Lone Pine Resources case where the Quebec government has banned fracking in the St. Lawrence River watershed. And ironically, a Canadian-based company that had opened an office in Delaware to use the NAFTA investor-state challenge, they basically are suing the Canadian government for $250 million because of a policy decision made by Quebec to protect the environment, right? And public health. I mean, the environment and public health in terms of fracking. So you can see what's happening here is that it's pretty problematic, not only in the fact that you're you know, putting this chill effect on public policy that might be in people's interest. I'm worried about it impacting the profits of a corporation. But in addition to that, like, what's really shocking is that, you know, government in the age of austerity where they're saying that we don't have money for, you know, education and public health care and all of these things are willing to sign agreements where they're basically willing to pay corporations, you know, in the tunes of hundreds of millions to billions of dollars for public policy decisions, right? And it sounds absolutely ridiculous, and people often hear that and they don't believe it, but that's the case. And that's been the case for every trade agreement or so quote-unquote trade agreement, which we try to refer to as corporate rights agreements now. That's been the case with all of these agreements ever since NAFTA till, now the TPP and, you know, the 27-odd FIFA agreements that Canada signed around the world.
So by expanded corporate rights, you mean that corporations benefit at the expense of national governments?
I mean, I would say not at the expense of national governments. I'd more try to frame it as, you know, corporations benefit at the expense of communities and people. You know, national governments, you know, there's interest in them for their GDP to see their own corporations getting these powers abroad. But who really suffers is not, you know, national governments, whether it's the Canadian government or the government of Vietnam. It's the people and communities, right? The people that aren't going to benefit because they don't own a multinational company that's going to, you know, exploit a mining site in Australia, for example. So they're not going to benefit off of these agreements. The corporations absolutely will, and, you know, by that token, you could say, you know, a country to a certain extent will. But we can't frame this as a national issue, right, in terms of national government. It's really about corporations exercising power over the ability of people to make decisions for themselves, but also basically getting bailouts with people's money. You know, public financing is being given to corporations for risks that they're taking around the world, right? You know, basically, you know, you could look at, you know, the case of the Keystone Pipeline, right? You know, Keystone and TransCanada are pushing for this pipeline in the U.S. where they know there's a great deal of public opposition, which should be an investment risk for them. But they ignore the investment risk because they believe that they can just proceed with this project and they'll get compensation if the project fails through an investor state challenge, right? So it's really problematic on a great deal of fronts. But what it really does is that it impacts people the most.
And that would, it impacts people not only in Canada. You gave the example of fracking in Quebec.
Yeah.
But it impacts, I would assume it impacts people in other and even smaller or poorer countries that Canada signs free trade agreements with as well. Some Canadian corporations, I'm guessing, are quite powerful.
Absolutely. I mean, if you look at some of the investor state arbitrations, like Canada's had some of the most investor state arbitrations levied against them. You know, there's billions of dollars in outstanding claims. But if you look at it globally, Canadian mining corporations are some of the corporations around the world that are using these investor state arbitrations the most. You know, like cases in Venezuela and Mongolia, you know, all around the world, there's been these investor state challenges that Canadian corporations have launched. So, you know, it absolutely impacts people all over the world. And you know, like, it's this interesting thing where we often divide ourselves as, like, these different nation states in terms of people in this country and that country. And really what it is that it's corporations, you know, undermining the rights of, you know, people all over the world. I mean, one of the great examples of that, especially with the TPP, is going back to the pharmaceutical issue, right? Like, you know, antiretroviral drugs and, you know, drugs to treat things like, you know, HIV and other things around the world, the vast majority, 80% of the drugs consumed in the global south they're generics that are made in countries like India. So once you start taking some of these global south countries and incorporating them in these trade agreements where, you know, patent protections for pharmaceutical drugs are going to be in place, it's going to be a life and death situation for people that need those drugs, right? Because the costs are going to be through the roof. Many people aren't going to have the luxury of pharmacare or other plans. And so what it really will mean is, you know, like we hear these horror stories where people are selling homes to, you know, basically have a, you know, treatment to treat someone in their family and to pay the drug costs. So, you know, that's the kind of impact that we're looking at is that, you know, in every way possible that we can imagine, you know, people are going to have be severely impacted by these agreements. And, you know, obviously, you know, corporations' bottom line will look much better. They'll profit.
And is it a done deal, a hard job that we're going to enter into and participate in the Trans-Pacific Partnership?
It's not a done deal. It's been signed, which means that the text can no longer be modified. And that's what the signing ceremony that happened in February this year, that's what that was for. But what has to happen is that all of the participating countries have to ratify the agreement. Now, there are certain countries like Japan and the U.S., if they don't sign, I think that the agreement falls apart. But there's other countries that I think can choose to participate or not, regardless of whether the U.S. and Japan proceed. So in Canada, you know, like what the real goal here is that, like, you know, and we've been doing a great deal of work to try to do this, is largely raising public awareness and putting pressure on the government about, I mean, you might say I'm biased about this, but it's hard not to be biased about these agreements. But these are horrible agreements. They're completely antithetical to anything that people would want in terms of social justice or, you know, democratic community participation in their communities. And, you know, raising public awareness about those problems, I think, is a way that we can, you know, really put pressure on the federal government not to ratify this agreement. And also recognizing that with the TPP, it's not just about stopping this one deal, but, you know, that level of awareness in the Canadian public to this agreement would only raise, you know, opposition to other agreements that might come down in the future as well as recognizing the problem that agreements like NAFTA and others are that are already existing for people here as well.
And if people don't want to see the deal ratified, what can they do, Harjab?
Well, I mean, this is good timing for this program because as of June 30th is the deadline that people have to submit their comments to the federal government on the TPP. They've had an open comment period where they're asking for public feedback. And we obviously encourage every individual to submit comments as well, but we really, really encourage organizations and community groups to make submissions as well in terms of how the agreement would impact their sector or their community. June 30th is that deadline. But I mean, aside from that, because, you know, that's, you know, work where you're directing information to the government, which is important. The most important thing I feel is just to continue to do public education work. Anyone that knows about these agreements, talk about them amongst your family, host events on campus, host events at your workplace, whatever you can do to continue educating people about this agreement is really what we're really pushing for people to do in the next little while.
Harjit Gruel spoke with Red Eye Sean Mullen earlier this week. Harjit Gruel is the Pacific's regional organizer for the Council of Canadians, and you can find out more about this trade deal at canadians.org/trade.